Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks so much once again for joining us. And it's a special ruck because, one, we've got three people in the studio. Myself, Will Kelleher. On my left, Alan Dimmock, editor now of Rugby World magazine.
How are you? You're right. Yeah, good mate.
And all the way from the other side of the world, we have a reappearance of Mark Evans. You didn't need to wear the garland, Mark, from the studio.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back. You're back from Fiji.
I am. Well, I'm flying back out on Saturday, so yeah.
Flying visit. How long have you been back?
Just before Christmas. So,
okay.
Yeah, nice.
And you've been watching loads of rugby.
Loads of rugby, yes.
As ever.
Can't get enough.
Right, well, it's brilliant to have Mark back all the way from Fiji. We'll get into what he's been doing down there in a little bit, but you've been back in the UK, so what have you been watching, Mark, over this weekend?
Yeah, well, I watched three of the games, which is a poor effort, frankly, isn't it? But, you know, there were one or two other things on. One of my children's birthdays.
Scouting for the Fijian side, were you?
No. Part of the, you have to be qualified to play for Fiji to play for the Druids. So, not that many possibles. There were one or two, but you never know. I watched the Falcons game against the Tigers. I watched Gloucester against Saracens Friday night. And I watched Exeter against Saints.
I tell you what, I'm quite excited to get stuck into some of these because there's loads of stuff to talk about from this slate of games we had at the weekend. So
it was quite a newsworthy weekend.
It was.
We'll get into it, but we will, on this pod, get through the latest from the Premiership, recapping the weekend. Owen Farrell faces a potential ban. That's one of them. He's been cited for his high tackle on Jack Clement on Friday night for Sarries. Tom Curry and Luke Cowan-Dickie have got fitness scares ahead of the Six Nations. Also, between the time we recorded the last podcast, Nick Evans has been appointed England attack coach for the Six Nations, so we'll talk a bit about that. And as we mentioned, Mark is back from Fiji. Of course, he's now the chief executive of the Fijian Drua, so we'll take his thoughts on that. But also, we'll name our god and goddess of the week. But first, why don't we delve straight into the Premiership action? Because there was loads that went on, so that'll come next. Right, lads, loads that went on over the Premiership weekend, and we've been having a chinwag off-air, and all the chatter has been about Newcastle Falcons. Alan Dimmock, take it away.
Clear the floor, because the Falcons are flying. it's an interesting one. We've spoken about their travails in previous seasons, and there's an old saying that a change is as good as a rest. For Newcastle, who perennially underspend compared to their competitors in the league, it seems like a change is as good as a couple of hundred mil on the salary cap, because under Dave Walder, they just seem to be doing incredibly well. And I was speaking to a contact at Newcastle last night, and they're just buzzing about home games. They're just like, we want to talk about it as a fortress where people dread coming to play us here. And they're doing exceptionally well. I just want to read you some top line stats from the weekend.
We love it.
I got these from Oval Insights. So Falcons top the pile compared to all the competitors in the league for most tries this weekend with 6, most meters made with balls in hand 430, most defenders beaten 25, most clean breaks with 11, but importantly on the other side, fewest turnovers conceded 6, 100% set piece. Now that's exceptional for this round, but also, just looking at the season as a whole, they're leading the way for first phase tries with 24. Gloucester and Quins have got 19 apiece, so they're second. But 24 is enormous. Now, obviously, we're going to give it the big George McGuigan here. And a lot of that is, it will be pushover tries and a lot of stuff from Moles. But just exceptional stuff from them so far this season. And we just need to give them their due.
Yeah, They were amazing, weren't they, Mark? And on that note that Al mentioned about the money, we've got a bit of information about what they're spending and how little, basically.
Yeah. I have, from a pretty decent source, I mean, they are spending well under the salary cap. You know, seven figures under the cap.
Yeah.
And they're not dogging it out, as Al has said. They played some fantastic footy on the weekend. They really did. Carreras has got, understandably, given his try-scoring record, has got a lot of the press, and rightly so. But funnily enough, I didn't even think he was the best of their back three. Yeah. I mean, I thought Tom Penny at fullback,
yeah.
That switch from centre where he used to play to fullback has been inspired. He was extraordinarily good.
Yeah.
You know, when Adam Radwan's your weakest link in the back three, you know, and he had a good game too, you know you've got a bit of poke. They really have. And I thought the other guy who really stood out was the fly half was Brett Cannon. His game management was absolutely outstanding, because they scored six tries, but their tactical kicking on the 4G was outstanding.
The thing as well about before this season started, one of the talking points for Newcastle was who's going to guide this team in attack, because, you know, it'd been not musical chairs, but it seemed like a few people were auditioning to wear that 10 shirt. Mm. So to see them click is exceptional. They obviously do things a very Newcastle Falcons way. You know, people from Scotland might know well the absolute madman that is Scott McLeod, who looks after their line out, and what a phenomenal job he's doing. Mm. And I know that he gets on really well with the players. It helps that he's mad as a box of frogs in the best possible way. But just quickly to go back on Carreras, and Will, I know you've got some thoughts on this as well, is according to Oval Insights, 1.23 tries per 80 minutes this season. So he's almost guaranteed a try a game more, and he is, that's more than any other player that's played more than five games in the Premiership. So it's actually looks incredible, because he's played so many more games. So, for example, Cowan Dickey's played fewer than five games, has only played five games, and has a bigger total than that. But in the back line, Carreras is just running riot.
And I think it's really important that we talk about how well Newcastle played, because when these results happen, we tend to say, oh, what's wrong with Leicester, that's the story. I think it would be, and look, that is a story, by the way, and I'm sure we'll touch on it in a minute, but I think it's really important to stress how well Newcastle played, and it's the they beat Sale up there, they've beaten Leicester, these are quality teams, and they beat them comfortably. Now, look, they've got a thin squad, and, you know, the league's really tight, and who's to say they go through a rough patch and still come 11th? You know, but, and here's me on my hobby horse again. What Newcastle are doing with the resources they've got and the market they are trying to serve is outstanding. Dean Richard did a great job there for many years. They overachieved. Remember, they made the playoffs one year. And, you know, but at some point, they will hit a bad year. They will. It's inevitable. Yeah. When your resources are that thin, you're going to hit a poor year, and you might come bottom. You know, what's a really sensible thing to do? Let's put a team that is over pitching itself in an area that we need. Let's relegate them. Yeah, that's a really, really good idea. Really strategic thinking. Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't resist
it. Welcome back, Mark Evans.
That's all right.
We've missed you.
It's like a comfy pair of slippers, isn't it?
But, I mean, yeah, you mentioned the Leicester thing there, and I feel, well, two things to note is when you look at what Sale have done in the last couple of weeks and what they might do in the next few months, Newcastle's result beating them 2014, I think it was, which I know really annoyed Alex Sanderson and was the reason why they kind of turned it around the last couple of weeks, because he was so annoyed about that. That's a marquee result. But then also you look at Leicester, and as you said, obviously, the emotional turmoil, I suppose, of this season with Steve Borthwick leaving and also Kevin Sinfield is totally manifesting itself on the pitch. Because you can see, just in the statistics, I was just looking at this for my Monday Morford Times subscribers, that they've conceded 35 points three times now this season and two in the last couple of weeks. And they only did that once last season and three times in the 2020-2021 season. And if you look at the points conceded per game under Kevin Sinfield's defence was 20.1 And in the last few weeks, it's been 33 since he's left.
I think just one sort of word of court caveat, I suppose. They are half missing Montoya and Vis.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. They're 2-8. That, it just goes to show in this league, if you, I don't care who you are, and I almost include Saracens in this as well, now that their squad is not as deep as it used to be for certain reasons. If you lose 2, 3, 4 of your absolutely key personnel in this league, you're probably going to lose a few.
Well, are we counting possibly one of their best scrum halves as well? Because he's moved upstairs. Like, that's a genuine question. He is clearly he's being earmarked for coaching because he's got such a phenomenal rugby brain on him. It's good to have that kind of rugby brain on the pitch.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, look, they're hardly short in that position, are they? Let's be frank.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly don't think that Wigglesworth would have made a huge amount of difference the last few weeks. I do think Will's point about the sort of psychological sort of, it went on for a while, didn't it? And it was like a sort of sword of Damocles dangling over them, and then and it's happened, and it is disruptive, and it's psychologically it's a hard one to get over. But I don't think you can minimise those two guys right down the spine of the team. Are really important, and they haven't played for the last 3 weeks. I think I've got that right. The last three games. And my word, it done half show.
Can I ask Will a question whilst we're talking about culture shocks and, you know, moods in camp? You spent some time recently with Sale Sharks, and you know, sorry Mark, their result against Quins was a big one. They are travelling really well at the moment. Well. Sale, I just wondering if you could give us a bit of insight from what you learnt with your time with them.
It was really fun going up there. I mean, it was one of those where often we, unfortunately, don't get the chance to go up there often because we spend our time going west and going north and to the Midlands and all that. But it was I organised it the day before, and the media guys were like, oh, look, if you can get here for 9:30, then you'll be able to see some decent amount of stuff. And so I was then poking it into the sat-nav and went, oh, God, that means leaving it 5:45. So I think I did about 12 different motorways on the way up there because there were no trains and all that sort of stuff. But it was really good. And Alex Sanderson, as you guys will both know, is a fantastic orator, an amazing speaker, and talking about Prussian war strategy and all sorts. There's all sorts going on there. But he said that what he'd done, because he likes theming weeks and things like that, he's kind of cut down on what he calls the fluff a bit this season, because he talked to the players and they said they wanted a bit more of just getting on with it rather than just talking about things.
I mean, sorry to jump in here, but that's something that we have talked about a little bit in the past. Like, I remember hearing stories a couple of seasons ago when he first came in about making big props do hot yoga and stuff like that. And like, we're here to scrummage. Like, let us crack on with it. So it sounds like he's absorbed all that.
But he is. And I think it's some of it is a marketing strategy where they're talking about being the fabric of the North and all that sort of thing. But it is interesting how they are really trying to grow a local bunch of lads, about like they did in 2006 and had when they won the title there with Jason Robinson and Richard Wigglesworth and Charlie Hodgson and all those guys under Philippe Saint-André. And actually Pete, the kit man who I spoke to there, Pete Allen, who has a really cool room where he has all the shirts of teams that they've played against up on the walls, and every morning he plays 40 minutes of a genre of music. So it could be country and western or opera or R&B. So we had Craig David on Wednesday.
Oh, well, never mind, eh?
Yeah. And he was saying that
there's a joke in there about what he played on Thursday and Friday and Saturday.
Very good.
But he was saying that as a viewer who's around the team and has been for 20 years, he really sees a 2006 feel around the current Sale guys. And then they've got that sort of Afrikaans beef in there as well with the Dupreer brothers. And by the way, Rob Dupreer,
he's playing fantastic.
Unbelievable season. And we're looking at George Ford coming back, and he seems to have a real influence there on the attack and what they're doing.
I've got a sales stat for you that includes a Dupreer if you want it.
Go on.
And this just tells you just how aggressively Sale are going about their business this season as well. Is in the top four for dominant tackles contacts this season, there are three Sale players in the top four: Dan Dupreer, Ben Curry, and John O'Ross.
Nice. Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, and Rob Dupreer, that move that they made to score one of their tries, where it was a bit of deception from Tuolangi, Sam James putting Aaron Reid round the corner, and scoring that try was just lovely play. And I think Rob Dupria is having an amazing season. It's going to be fascinating how George Ford now comes in and plays in that team.
It was a good headache to have, though.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. But it was something Stuart Barnes mentioned the other day. He was wondering whether Rob Dupria could be the sort of player who could move to 12 if they had George Ford at 10. But actually, a lot of the feeling up at Sale is that Ford might end up wearing an England shirt before he wears a Sale
one. I think
he
might.
Which is a huge frustration for them.
Well, yes and no. I mean, they're in good shape. I think they're very well suited for this time of the season as well. I wonder why ever, you know, but at the end of the day, you win the Premiership on a hard ground in June and May.
Well, this year, but I was just going to say that, actually. It's funny the way the seasons move, and it might not make any difference, but everything's a month earlier this season,
yes,
because of the World
true.
Cup. So the final's 27th of May.
But that's when it always used to be traditionally,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it? It was
yeah,
always the last weekend in May.
But
you know?
It's not like you're playing at the end of June, which when
the
Queens won the league.
The sun just starts poking out over the top of the stand.
Does it? Is that right?
Just
okay.
I'm not sure I saw the sun up at Sale, but that's so stereotypical, isn't it? But
I think they're a really good side, and I think they're in. And I think you've got to say now they've nailed on a top four place. They
aren't,
you know,
so, yeah.
People are underestimating, I think, how many few games there are left.
Mm.
You know, I think now we're down to 11 teams. You know, we're well past
basically nine, isn't it?
Yeah, we're well past
eight,
I think, well past halfway. Can't see them, those two, dropping out the top four now.
No.
But the rest of it, anyone. Anybody?
Well, if you look at the table as we are on a Monday, Saracens top with 52, and we'll get onto them in a sec. Sale second on 43, and then there's a bit of a gap that they created by beating Quins to Quins on 31, level with Gloucester, although Quins have got a better... Well, they've got actually, just looking at it now, exactly the same win-loss ratio and exactly the same points difference. So it will be on try scored at the moment, splitting those. But at the bottom of the table, we've got Bristol, who were just desperate on Sunday. I was there watching them at London Irish, and we don't need to do loads on that game. But
I haven't seen that game. Were they really bad?
Well, they went 20-7 down just after half time, and Irish kicked another penalty to make it 23-7. And there just didn't seem to be any staging of a comeback or using the really talented players they've got. They had Genge and Sinclair, who weren't really dominating loads of the scrums. Semi Radradra got ran over by Cunningham South at one point in the second half, which was quite alarming. Johan Lloyd's a brilliant player, I think, at 12, not really doing much. Magnus Bradbury at 8, a very good Scotland number 8. Just kind of middling and a bit average. With talking about money at the start with Newcastle, doesn't mean that you're brilliant because you've got a billionaire who owns you, but this is a team who've been stated that they want to win cups, not just compete for them, but win them. And they're nowhere. I think they've won 11 out of their last 35 Premiership games, which for a team with a very highly paid squad and massive resources and a head coach signed up till 2028, that's an alarming record, really, isn't it?
It's a season and a half of underperformance now, isn't it? It's not... Look, teams go through bad patches, but good teams come out of them. And there's not a huge sign of Bristol coming out. I know it's still very tight, and you could argue, and I would be arguing if I was Pat Lamb, we can still get to the playoffs. It is that close. You know, you put a run together now, you win six out your last eight, you'll go top four. I think that's because of the fact that everybody's playing each other. And would you say that was impossible for Bristol? No, but at the moment, I didn't see them this week, but I watched them against the Quins. I thought they were incredibly lucky to beat Quins.
Yeah.
But a lot of grit, but they didn't play much.
No, I mean, the second half
there's
of
not
that
many
game,
signs of them putting a run together, are
no,
there?
No, that second half of that game, they had 20% possession, basically, and dogged it out. And it was that tap tackle and the holding up Esther Hazen over the line, that, or knocking the ball out of his hands, that kind of won them that in the end. But yeah, it's an odd one in the Prem at the moment because they're bottom, but they're 10 points off Gloucester and Quins in third and fourth.
Which is two games.
Two wins, yeah. But also, you look at what they've been doing at the moment, and you don't see them winning those two games.
No, whereas you compare them to, say, and they're by this team's by no means the finished article either. But you came to Bath, who, again, coming off another couple of poor seasons, maybe more, But there's a feeling around Bath at the moment that actually they might have just turned the corner. Yeah, they obviously they benefited hugely from Worcester's demise. And all the rest of it. They recruited terrifically well. If Barbary gets fit, I know that's almost becoming like a too-laggy question, but you know, if Barbary gets fit, you look down there, roster, and think, "Poor, they've got a lot of firepower." Yeah. You can, I mean, if you're a Bath fan, you could be starting to feel slightly optimistic. Mm. Let's not overkill it.
They've been doing Bristol, that for a while.
Bristol, I'm not sure I'm hanging my hat on at the moment.
No. The Bath one, I've got my girlfriend's a Bath fan, and one of my best mates is as well. And I always say to them that the Bath problem has never been having a bad team. They've often had a really good 15. No, and then the rest of it is the problem.
Mm.
So we'll see with Bath. There's loads of England-y talking points that include the Prem. So why don't we have a little break now, and then we'll get into Owen Farrell sighting, injuries to Curry and Cowan Dickey, and also Nick Evans, who I believe, Mark, you must have been involved in getting him over to Harlequins those years ago.
All those years ago.
So we'll get into that after this.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so we promised to get into the England ins and outs and suspensions and bans and injuries and recruitment and everything else, but the breaking news as we record this on a Monday morning is that Owen Farrell, most recently the England captain, has been cited for that tackle that lots of you would have seen on Friday night. Late in the game, he hit Jack Clement, the flanker, in the head with his shoulder, was allowed to stay on the field. It was a bit of a confusion between Carl Dixon, the referee, and the TMO as to whether they could look back at it.
They can, by the way. Which foul play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a mix-up there, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But then what happened, as lots of you will know, is that Sod's Law, it's a tight old game, and Owen Farrell kicks the winning drop goal and Saracens win at Gloucester. So, gents, Owen Farrell cited there. I was actually going to say at the top of this show, but we'll mention it now, that we don't have Stephen Jones and Stuart Barnes on today because I think we're keeping them apart because of their in-copy spat about Owen Farrell. So in the Sunday Times, Stuart Barnes was saying you've got to ban Farrell because he's got this consistent record of high tackles. And then Stephen Jones had his retaliation in Monday's Times and said the slobbering fools who are all going for Owen Farrell need to shut up. So, lads, what do we think about this? Mark, should we start with you?
Yeah, he's going to get a ban.
Yeah.
I've got no strong feelings about Owen Farrell as a track record either way, frankly. I mean, you deal with each case on its merits, and he's going to get a ban. He's got cited. He was a little fortunate. Sometimes it goes in your favour. Saracens would say, well, Ben Earl got a red card. Was it against London Irish?
Yeah, and then got rescinded.
Rescinded. You know, over a 20-odd game season, those are the breaks. You win some, you lose some. You've just got to, different in a cup final or a playoff, but in a regular season game, you've just got to ride with those. You get some go your way, some don't. He's going to get a ban. It was a shoulder to the head. I don't think there's much doubt about that. It's a question of how long.
Yeah. Just before you jump in, Al, on the the sort of admin of it. So his hearing's on Tuesday. We'll probably find out on Wednesday morning what the ban is. It's dangerous tackling, and because it was contact to the head, it's a mid-range offence. It has to start at that, which carries a tariff of 6 weeks. But as we all know, 6 weeks doesn't mean they get a six-week ban. Also, which is pertinent to particularly for the Six Nations, is that Farrell hasn't before qualified for one of these speed awareness courses we talk about, the tackle
kindergarten.
Yeah.
What? Sorry, don't get me. No, we'll I'll let you go.
No, this feeds in
just
exactly.
To cover it off, he could take a week off his ban by undergoing one of these tackle courses, which Charlie Yules did after he got sent off against Ireland in the last Six Nations. So possibly, quite unlikely, that he'll be banned for the England-Scotland game. But should we go on tackle courses? What do you want to get into?
Firstly, and just an interesting note, is that we've had 9 red cards this season so far. This time last season, we had 10. So Arguably, if Farrell gets it, we'd be bang on trending the exact same as last year.
They're all learning. The players are learning.
Yeah, the players are learning. So, tackle awareness course is an interesting point to lead on. Now, firstly, Owen Farrell is an exceptional player. He is vital to how England rugby have played for years and years. The absolute skill and pressure, dealing with pressure to knock over that winning kick, fantastic. This, however, is I feel like we need to change the language of how we talk about incidents like this. Because we've all heard elite players at this level go, the most important thing is player safety, obviously. However, now, firstly, there should never be a however. But also, if we're going to have people saying stuff like that, or we're going to have this approach for years, let's hold people to it. So, is Owen Farrell knocking his pan in? So he might need this tackle awareness course, because if he's knocking his pan in to try and sort his tackle technique, and he isn't quite getting there in the heat of the moment, with his swinging shoulder and his low to high technique that he's been using for years and years, if he isn't changing that, why isn't he changing that? Is he working hard enough to try and change it? Or is he just not good? Is he exceptional at lots of things, as I mentioned earlier, but he's really not good at tackle selection? Because we've got to start talking about these things as a deficiency in people's games.
Because it will lose someone a game in a big World Cup semi or something.
We absolutely
like that.
Know it will, yeah. Because we've seen it for the last few years. And if we're just going, we can wear it, we'll just go by and by, and nothing will actually change that much. You know, I'm not up for calling loads and loads of players lazy, but in this instance, maybe it's time we start going about this.
Yeah, I disagree. I've got a couple of things. Tackle school, what a load of baloney. I mean, that's just nonsense. You're not telling me.
I don't agree that it's going to change anything. I don't think it changes anything.
Go to tackle school. What you mean? Like they're not doing it at their club or with England? Please. I mean, ridiculous, right? Forget it. Waste of time. Spend the money on something else.
Agree with you there.
I, however, are of the view it high tackles, or, you know, tackles to the head during games. I think it depends on what we're trying to do. Because if what we're trying to do is reduce the whole concussion, mitigate the concussion risk, it doesn't make any bloody difference. Mm. Right? That's not what's causing... all the research suggests it's very little to do with individual high tackles in high-profile games. Mm. It's much more to do with the amount of training, the amount of contact in training, at what age contacts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So let's at least be clear why we're trying to get this out of the game. And to say, it's about reducing concussion, the concussion issue, I'm sorry, I just don't think the data backs that up to any significant degree. There are other factors that are much, much more important. If we're doing it because, A, it's a bad look, and I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good look to have in the game, in the same way that we don't like tripping. Mm. It's sort of like... slightly offensive, isn't it? And headbutting and certain things. You just don't want them in the game.
Or tackles where someone lands on their head or fights and stuff.
All that kind of stuff. It's punching in the game. We don't see it anymore. Yeah. You know, that kind of no arms thing that with the shoulder charge in rugby league. They in the old school, the game's going soft. Don't be stupid, right? But it's what you're trying to the game to look like. It is.
Yeah.
People hate me when I say this, but it's a product. You know, what do you want your product to look like? But... I don't think we will ever get high tackles out of the game, ever. I just think the nature of the game is such, it is so fast moving and people change height so quickly and they slip and they fall into things. If anyone thinks that by hitting more red cards and longer bans, well, if you thought that was going to change the behaviour, wouldn't it have happened by now? Because I can't see any evidence of that.
You're kind of agreeing with me
here. Am I? That's disappointing.
My question here is do we think that... That's why I mentioned lip service before. Do we think that there is enough... Like, people are genuinely going, like, this is completely different. Now, I 100% agree with you. I would much rather see a demonstrable... what's the word? Shortening of the amount of contact time that people do.
Yeah.
And...
Fewer games.
Fewer games, absolutely. I mean, if Steve Jones was here, he'd probably be turning purple again about the number of test matches they played, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. My point is I would love, and it's an unanswerable question, I suppose, is I'd love to know how much of it is just lip service and, oh yeah, it's the most important thing, but behaviours, what's actually been done?
I don't know. I mean, I see stacks sometimes, you think, and this is the ones that really get me. I think, you see red and yellow cards, you think, well, what else was he meant to do there?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you see sometimes the ball carrier's coming in about a foot off the ground, well, leading with his head. Where am I meant to tackle him?
Yeah.
Well, tell me. It's a serious question. Which bit of his body am I meant to hit? Mm. Now, obviously, if he's running straight up and you take his head off, we all know. I saw there was an app, the one on the old social media the other week, where it was a real old style Trevor Liotta head high tackle. Now, yeah. Goodness me, my word! I don't know who he was playing for. Was at the time? Now, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do we see many of them now?
None, really.
Hardly any. You know, we're now. I don't know. I think, in a way, yeah, maybe we are agreeing. Is this concentration on the high tackle in games a little bit of a distraction for some of the other things that perhaps we should be doing?
Just on a note to sign it off, and we'll move on to some of the injuries and other bits. But I'd be really fascinated to know, and someone like Steve Borthwick might actually do this, Al, that if there was a metric or some sort of stat for players on tackle safety or something like they give away more penalties for this for dangerous stuff that is unnecessary than other players, and whether it then becomes into selection. So it might be that actually Owen Farrell's number's quite low, or it might be that it's quite high. We don't have that information, but it'd be amazing, wouldn't it, in the future, that because it will matter so much, especially in tournaments.
Well, especially if we're talking about, let's be honest, most directors of rugby are absolute control freaks.
Yeah.
And want to know everything
else. It's quite a money ball thing, like this guy's the safest tackler in the league or something like that.
Yeah, it's more about penalty counts as well. There's no doubt that he's a penalty machine. You know, they don't tend to keep their place unless they're absolutely wonderful in another area because, you know, we're slightly off the point here, but that. You look at the weekend. The number of teams whose set piece was really poor at the weekend. Exeter's was terrible, but they won the game comfortably. But the penalty count went their way for quite a long way. Gloucester, who you know probably should have beaten Saracens, frankly, but the penalty count was first half particularly was terrible, and their lineout fell apart for the first time all year. Gloucester's lineout fell apart. They blew two or three meters.
Yeah.
You can almost go 14 points here for Gloucester. They've got 14 points before you start because their driving maul is so good. Completely fell apart at the weekend.
It's the same with Bristol, actually, and there's something Pat Lamb mentioned that he was sort of bemoaning individual errors, and I think he said 19 penalties, but they conceded.
I read that. I haven't seen the game, but I read that. You can't win with that.
You know, Al will know, but the stats often change depending on where you look. So it was some places 17, some places 18. But yeah, it was a lot, basically. But the one person I'd like to mention, which will segue us nicely onto injuries, was Tom Pearson. And on the penalty thing, something that Declan Kidney mentioned about him afterwards is that he's fantastic at selecting the breakdowns to go for and the ones not to, and is conceding really a few amount of penalties. I think he's only conceded two defensive penalties in the whole season.
That is extraordinary for a back row forward.
That's a really unheralded skill as well.
But and now that my lovely segue is that Tom Curry, which is not lovely for him, got injured, pulled a hammy on the weekend. And there are 50 million back rows at the moment that could probably pay for England. But if he is out, which he could be, his brother perhaps, Ben Curry. But Tom Pearson, I think, is one. He did go to the England meetup the other day.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, because some rumblings I'd heard is that potentially there was an idea to move Tom Curry back to six, and that, well, Ben Earl was back at this.
Yeah, well,
this,
he's another one.
This
hot
box camp or whatever you want to call it, yeah. this fitness camp that they came in. He was there, and I made a point of asking a couple of people in the couple of players in the Premiership last night. You know, it's like, who do you fear facing? And the name I kept hearing was, like, in terms of dynamism, Ben Earl is miles ahead of everyone else.
Agree.
Like, sometimes you feel sorry for his shadow and having to keep up with him. So, I mean, certainly, if rumblings about moving Curry across and having Earl at seven and Curry at six were right up there, fine. Maybe the question is more, who do you want to play at six?
Yeah,
at this point.
And Eddie Jones always talked about having three line-out jumpers, so it's what you do with that as well. Courtney Laws has been suffering with a glute injury.
Yeah, and whether you think you can play with two, like, if you're going to pick Billy at eight, and there's a debate, I don't think his position is completely inviolate at all. It's all a balance thing, isn't it? And actually, we ought to maybe stop talking so much about who's the six, who's the seven, and say, right, who's the back row?
Yeah, the combo.
Because what's the combination? It's about combinations rather than individual players. People are getting picked now, particularly in the bigger nations with a bigger player pool. They're getting picked for combinations. They're not picked because, oh, he is the best number. Depends how you want to play.
We'll move on to the news that we heard this week that Alex Lowe actually exclusively revealed for the Times that Nick Evans is joining up as England's attack coach for the Six Nations, former All Black fly half, bit of a ledge down the stoop.
Oh, yes.
And can you tell us the story. How did that all happen? Was it, 2007-ish, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to claim credit for this.
Okay. Who's the one?
I'm
going to claim a little bit, right? We were in the market, obviously, for a fly half and
Jeremy Staunton,
post Andrew Mertens.
Mertens, of course, yeah.
As
a quick one, I remember. I don't know if I've settled this on the rap before, but I used to ball boy at Harlequins.
Oh, did you?
The years that they got relegated.
Yeah, well, thanks for reminding me of that. Yeah.
And I'm going to blame you for this, Mark, because in the Premiership, we used to get £7.50 for the match. And if it was on Sky Sports, you get £15.
Yeah, did you?
And then got relegated and it went to £5.
Quite right.
And then we got promoted again.
Yeah. Stayed at
£5.
Thank God for that. Well, clearly I was on the ball.
The economics of it.
Excuse the pun.
But I was going to say, Mertens in that season down in the Championship, I remember particularly a game against the Chiefs, threw a triple miss pass to Hugo Monier, who I think scored five tries in the game.
He was,
so he was bloody good.
Even though he was past his best, and he's still and a real larrikin, Mertz, and still, you know, having a great time in Sydney the last time I saw him. I must look him up next time I'm there. But he'd retired, and we were looking for a fly half, and... And we got fairway, and Dean was driving it. He was sort of a great recruiter, and I helped a little bit towards the end when it looked like it might stall by releasing a little bit more resource. But he was one of the best overseas signings of
absolutely.
The Premiership era of 25 years or so. I think many people will argue with that. Lovely, lovely bloke, very, very intelligent about the game and about other things too. And I'm delighted. I think Quinns will be worried that it'll turn into a full-time, permanent role. And, that's just, you know, when you get good coaches, that's always the risk. I mean, look, we've talked about Leicester and the you know, I'm not sure that Leicester's... the personnel at Leicester, I'm not sure they've all moved across yet. I would not be at all surprised at the end of the season to see one or two more move from the Midlands to TW2.
There is a chatter that, well, England have said that Nick Evans is coming in purely for the Six Nations and will return to Quinns during fallow weeks.
Yeah.
And actually, now the Wasps and Worcester situation is they've tidied up the fixture list. There are fewer overlaps, so actually you won't miss many Quinns games.
Nope.
But there's word on the street that they're still trying to line up Wigglesworth for after the end of the season and perhaps for the World Cup. But it's an interesting one, Al, where it's Borthwick's been said to be good at picking people who challenge him. He's not just looking for yes men. And someone like Nick Evans, perhaps, has got a bit of a different philosophy and might challenge him in a different way in attack.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we've been talking about what Borthwick's selections will be and how that's affected by injury and such. Like, suddenly, the start of the Six Nations, if we find out tomorrow that Owen Farrell is missing the start of the Six Nations, then it's an England game plan without Farrell in the back line, which is something that's been like hen's teeth recently. It's a new guy trying to oversee it. Obviously, we've got the... tidy up for me the crossover with Gleeson and what's going on there.
They haven't tidied it up. So right, okay. Currently, there are two attack coaches. There has been no word whether Martin Gleeson has been removed or not. I suspect that he has been or will be, but it's working out the HR.
I've completely forgotten that.
So they haven't confirmed or denied that he's leaving.
It'll be interesting, this. Potential new driver for England's attack. Same vehicle? Are we going to see Smith cement his place at 10? Because he knows...
Should be back fit for Racing next week, it seems.
So it's just interesting to see how Evans, sort of the Evans approach fits in with who's available.
But let's be clear here, and it was said about Eddie, but it's true of most head coaches, unless they choose to do it otherwise. And nevertheless, that's still the head coach's choice. Nick Evans was coaching under Paul Gustard.
Yeah.
And in that era, Quinn's played a style of rugby that was demonstrably not Nick Evans's preferred style. But that's the role when you're an assistant coach. When you're an assistant coach, your job is to not undermine the head coach and to try and deliver the style and the game plan that the head coach decides they want to implement. Unless they delegate that entirely, and some do, you know, and it's up to, you know, I've known DORs or head coaches or whatever you want to call them, the boss, the bloke who picks the team, right? It's a very simple. Who's in charge? Answer: the bloke who picks the team's in charge, right? Yeah. Well, how he does it is entirely up to him. Mm. You know, it'll be down to Steve Borthwick. You know, how's he want to play? And then the assistant coach's job is to try and deliver that to the best of their ability.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing to sign that off that Stuart Barnes mentioned in his piece this morning in the Monday's Times is the grubby old drop goal that Nick Evans kicked against Stade Français.
Yes.
So he can play the rough and tumble stuff. That was I was at that game as well, and I was in the
29 faces like, in the pouring rain. Yeah,
and it was my parents used to sit in the the stand where they've now got the Chris Robshaw bar and the Debenture Lounge and all that. But me and my mate were behind the other set of posts, so we were looking at the far end, and there was about two... The first two rows were full of water because it was so bloody wet.
It was an extraordinary day.
But that season, Quinn's beat Stade home and away, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And is that where you got the idea for the big game?
Yes, that lit a big game,
with the flying horses in the Stade de France. Well, there you go. So, right... That's loads on the England chat, and we'll have more clarity on Luke Cowan-Dickey, who we haven't quite mentioned yet, who picked up an ankle injury. He hasn't.
That didn't look good.
No, he
just on that.
That did not look
very
good.
Very quickly on that. Don't want to spend too much time on that, but it's really interesting because under Eddie Jones, one of the things you could see is a bit shy of blooding and giving us a reasonable game time to new scrum halves, but particularly hookers.
Yeah.
So. If Luke Cowan-Dickey is out, and I asked a scrummaging coach last night from the Premiership, if they were to pick a squad, a pack for England purely to scrummage, who would you have? They had Val Rapavo-Ruskin at one. But
he's injured too.
But they had Luke Cowan-Dickey at two. Mm. Well, if he's missing out here, someone is going to have to deputise who's not seen an awful lot of Test rugby. So it's interesting opportunity. Jack Walker was at this fitness camp.
And went on Australia tour and didn't play, yeah.
Will it be him? I don't know. So it's going to be someone that we haven't seen much of.
And then...
Might be McGuigan.
McGuigan, and then Singleton's out for the season, so it's not going to be him.
Blame me.
So, you're right. There's a few options. There are a few options at tight head as well. And Will Stewart hasn't played since the autumn, so that's going to be interesting. So there's loads for Steve Borthwick to mull over as he looks at his selection this week. Next week's pod, we will confirm this off-air, but probably do it live from Twickenham because he's going to be announcing his Six Nations squad next Monday. So look out for that because it could be all sorts of ins and outs. And as we wrote in the Times today, we understand that there hasn't yet been a full formal request to change the number of players he's allowed to alter between Eddie's squad and his squad. He's allowed
the number
five,
of injuries help,
but the injuries help because you're allowed dispensation.
I think he's pushing an open door there.
It sounds like there's a there's a mood music that it wants to get done.
Yeah.
And also it was particularly notable that in the Nick Evans announcement, the RFU talked about the collaboration between club and country. So it sounds like repairing a bit of that. But next, and we're going to need some lapping waves and stuff like that to be put in, because we're going to tour all things Fiji. Because it's the reason why we've got Mark on. One of many reasons. But next, all sorts about Fiji and Drua. Mark, we'd love to know loads about what you've been doing down there on the islands and everything, but first of all, can you describe to us your scene? So when you look out your window in the office, is it all palm trees and beaches, or is it all that a bit stereotypical?
No, that's a bit stereotypical.
Is it a motorway?
On the ground, so we're right next to the airport. Okay. But my office...
Are you Nandi or Suva?
Nandi.
Okay.
My office looks across the mountains. It's quite a mountainous country. Although everyone always thinks palm trees and beaches, it's got that too, obviously, and 300 islands, 120 inhabited. But most people live on the main island, Viti Levu, which is where we're based, in near Nandi. And sometimes you look out and there's the odd, you know, cow roaming around and things like that. But it's a tropical island. It's very hot. It's 85 to 90 most days, most months, most weeks of the year. It's very humid. We're kicking off at 2:15 on a Saturday every home game. That's, you know, purely for TV, obviously.
And all games on island?
Games on island.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big, big change. And it's a project. I use that word a lot. This is a project. I suppose, you know, what are we doing? Well, we're trying to achieve four things. Putting it very, very simply, what's the role? It's, can you make this financially viable? In other words, give it longevity, you know, Pacific Island rugby and other rugby in other parts of the world has not got a great track record of longevity and financial stability. So first of all, we're going to make sure that the thing is got enough money to run and that we don't overspend and all the rest of it. Secondly, you know, can we go top half of Super Rugby within 3 years? That's quite a tall order when you think who we're playing against, the Crusaders and the Chiefs and the Brumbies. You know, it's a pretty high standard. So can we, that's the aim, that's the target, that's the second one. Thirdly, having a team on the island, it's the first time ever there's been a professional team on a Pacific island, based there, playing there, training there. Previously, if you're a rugby player in Fiji, and trust me, everybody is. It's just extraordinarily how popular the game is. Drive through any village at 6 o'clock at night, they're playing touch. They might not have a ball, but they're playing touch with a water bottle or a coconut. And that sounds ridiculously romantic. It's one of the reasons, literally true. But it's one of the reasons their passing's not great, because they actually haven't passed in their formative years. A lot of them haven't got a rugby ball to pass. So the weighting's all different. So can we get 75% of the national team playing for the Drua? And through that, can we improve the cohesion and the teamwork? Because the great problem with the national team, and that's the third other bit of the project, the national team's sevens were number one, or number two maybe in a bad year. 15s were 14th. One of the reasons is that the team never plays together. There aren't that many. So two things will change that. One, playing together more often for the Drua. So if we can get our representation of the national team on merit up to 75%, that's another sort of big target. And can we get a better fixture list for the national team? That's not really in my remit, but it's very, very closely connected, working very closely with Simon Rawalui, who's the high performance director over there. And I suppose the fourth bit is to use the Drua as a focal point to improve some of the pathways, and not just of players, but of coaches and referees. We've got a fantastic indoor training facility, which is like nothing they've ever had on the island before, and with a proper gym and proper meeting rooms and all that kind of stuff that's never been on the island. To give you some idea, and then I'll shut up because I could go on for hours about Fiji. It's very wet at the moment. Cyclone season, and we are. I was on this morning. I was on meetings because it's 7 o'clock at night. We're 12 hours difference over there, and our big headache this week is every pitch is flooded.
Right. Yeah.
There's not a 4G on the island. So you are having to meet challenges and things that you have to fix and try and improve. That I'm glad it's not my first job, because yeah, I'm not sure I would be too good at it. But hopefully I've got a bit of experience to bring to bear.
Yeah. Can I ask you what it's like with the political background in Fiji? Obviously, there's just been a recent election there. If you look at the modern history of Fiji, it sometimes feels like there's been more coups than a Highland farmer. Like, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, although we've just had our first peaceful transition.
Exactly, that's what I was asking.
For the first time since independence in 1980. And, you know, it was a free and fair election. And, you know, progress is being made. Having said that, there's always a degree of instability. There's always political risk in that. And given that we are... it's so central to the culture. You know, rugby is not back page news in Fiji, it's front page news.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's always interest, there's always, everybody's got an opinion, right or wrong, and that's fine. So I suppose one of my jobs is to navigate the Drua through and bring a degree of stability to it that. And it's new, and we've never done it. They've never done it. It's like running a startup, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it must really be really is. Exciting.
It's great fun, yeah.
And my second question is like, you mentioned the sheer volume of people that play rugby, and there's a reason why foreign teams look to scout the islands.
Yeah.
What's it like from a talent ID point of view?
We lose... You see, I'm saying we all the time, aren't I?
When's your citizenship coming?
We lose a lot of talent at 17, 18, 19. And we lose it to the NRL. We lose it to other super rugby teams outside of Fiji. It's in New Zealand and Australia, largely through scholarships to big rugby playing school like Brisbane Boys or Rotorua High. And we have a lot of scouting from Top 14 and Pro D2.
Do Claremont still have their
facility
on the islands?
No, but they're still quite strong in that part of... it's called Sigatoka. It's quite strong in... They're quite strong in that province where Sigatoka is, and that is probably the strongest rugby-playing province amongst a load of strong rugby-playing provinces. I mean, but you say that, there are... And you mustn't... And I'm trying to say to people, you mustn't take it for granted and be glib about it, or there'll always be another one. There's so much talent... Well, yes and no. Yes, there's a huge amount of raw physical talent of pace and size, but there's still a pile of work to do in terms of coaching. There's a pile of work to do at schools rugby because it, you know, there's a pile of work to do in facilities because they play on the most... You go past some rugby pitches on the island, they can't possibly play on that, surely.
Yeah.
But they do. And so there's still an awful lot to do, but as you say, it's really exciting. It's very interesting. Culturally, it's so different. That's the other thing we've hardly touched on. You've got to put all this into a culture that is so very, very different to ours and is so very, very non-Western. You know, the Itokai culture in Fiji of the indigenous people is so collective, it's so linked around the family and faith and the village. You've got to put everything in that context. So, yeah, it's very, very... It's why I went. I knew it would be so different to anything I'd done before.
Are you hopeful that... Because obviously at the end of this year, most rugby fans are going to look at Fiji and say it'd be amazing if they were to properly challenge and have that time together that you've mentioned with the guys that have not played together and can actually... take a couple of scalps, but maybe less so on the national team because that's not your remit. But are you hopeful that, let's say, in 5 years, that there is something really significant there?
Make no mistake about it. This project is to turn Fiji into a regular top 8, 15-a-side country, right? Don't shilly-shally about it. That's the aim. Whether you achieve it or not is, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But that's a multifactorial process, but that nobody's shying away from the fact that that's the aim. Can we, and we're realistic, we know that the very, very best players from the Drua will at some point go to almost certainly France or Japan.
Yeah.
Because we simply can't afford to, we can't match the salaries in those two countries. But look at it on the positive side, until the Drua emerged, everybody had to go. because there was no side to play for. If you didn't, the only way to get off the island to play professional rugby pre-Drua, and this is why it's such a huge change, was get scouted into a school in New Zealand and Australia at 15, 16, get spotted by a French scout and move to France at a similar age, or play sevens and get spotted off the sevens circuit. There was no other way of doing it. This is a sea change.
So what's your first home game?
Crusaders.
Is I mean, if we can, who do we need to talk to about
March
getting
the,
to that
March
game?
The 11th. The Times offices after
March
this,
the 11th at La Toca, the Crusaders, 2:15 in the afternoon on Saturday. I'll keep a couple of seats for you.
Yeah, and the Drew will pay for it all, right?
You're holding the purse. Of course, we're rolling in money.
Yeah. We'll just bankrupt the whole union with our travel expenses. But no, that's fascinating, and there's so much more we could talk about. So maybe on next few rucks we could. But I think now the pertinent thing to do is to get onto our God or Goddess of the Week. And you introduced the devil, Mark, but I don't think we'll probably have a devil this week.
No, it's been a good week this week.
So after this, we'll have our God or Goddesses of the Week. Right, God or Goddess of the Week time. And Al has requested to go first because he's got a belter. Or something a bit different, you think?
Something a bit different. It's not a god or a goddess or a devil. No. I'm going for divine intervention
of the week. Oh, he's broken the
system. And it's a choice between two 50-22s. Well, Ben Meehan's case, a 22-22, I saw it described as.
Yeah.
That was just a ridiculous kick that he managed to lace through so close to the try line, and just off of. By the way, Ben Meehan can use both of his feet. You need to keep track of him, like the way he plays is brilliant. Or the other one is Bordeaux Beagles scored a belter of a try when Maxime Luku laced through a 50-22, quick thinking. The young winger, whose name falls out of my head completely, 19-year-old guy, runs in, quick looping pass when everyone at Bayonne was just sort of standing around going, what the hell do we do now? And Mo Farna scored. It was brilliant stuff in front of a bumper crowd in Bordeaux, and yeah, just good fun.
Sort of haloing on two kicks, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and they're back a bit, aren't they, Bordeaux? After, you know, Urias has got, you know, they had a terrible start, but they're playing well.
So I'm hoping, actually, and I'm waiting to get it full signed off to do a nice French weekend coming. So I'm looking forward to that. Good possibly.
Man. Oh, well, that's going to eat into our Fiji budget, but
Clermont Leicester Friday night. And then Racing Harlequins on the Sunday. And I might see if I can get to Stade Français against the Lions in Paris on
Saturday.
Who,
again, are playing very well.
Second in the league. Very
well,
Gustard,
yeah.
Stade
Français playing really well. First time for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. But Al mentioned loopy passes, and I think your nomination might include a long loopy pass to the left wing.
On a weekend, which I think we all do. We love an underdog, don't we? We love a surprise. We love it being unpredictable. Newcastle Tigers, loved it. Benetton beat Ulster. What a result for Benetton. And fifth in the league or sixth in the league. You know, the signs in Italian rugby are very, very positive. And Connacht, I think, a nod to Connacht, who beat the Sharks, who have been travelling pretty well.
They needed that Connacht as
they
well.
They did. But really, fair play. Good result. Really but I've got to go with the mighty Caldy.
Yes.
The Wirral's finest. Who beat Ealing Trailfinders. And that is for a team that has got the most wonderful junior section. Their mini and junior section is just fantastic. Who over the years has produced people like Ben Johnson and Matt Cairns and people like that. You know, they've got a real strong and many others. I've you know, go look on Wikipedia. They've got a real storied, you know, contribution to the game, and you know, many of whom are semi-pro and whatever. To knock over Ealing. And I'm sure lots of us have seen it on Twitter and YouTube. You know, you look and think, well, there's nobody beyond the post. You know, it's not, they don't get huge crowds, although they got a good one. They beat Sale in the playoff. But those bunch of young kids behind the goal going absolutely bonkers because their team, who I'm sure they play mini rugby for Caldy, their team has just knocked over the unbeaten league leaders, was just heartwarming, and I loved it.
So the long loopy pass was from the fly half.
Yes, one that he sort of missed five or whatever it was.
But it possibly helped that at that point Ealing were down to 12.
Yes.
Because they had a tight head red carded early on and then two yellow cards later on in the game. But yeah, 26-24, hell of a result. And actually it's going to make it really quite interesting now, this championship season, because we still don't quite know what's happening with people
and it's still going to... I wouldn't be at all surprised if it comes down to the second game between...
Yeah, at the moment, I was going to say...
Jersey and Ealing.
Ealing played 11-1, 10, lost 1, 51 points. And then Jersey, a second, played 11-1, 10, lost 1, 49 points. So that is a bit of a race, isn't it? Coventry, Bedford after that. But
it is.
Those are the two. And it... Imagine that, a Jersey in the Premiership, for example.
Don't get me going. Not this late in the podcast.
We're just putting out the fishing rod.
Get me going.
Right, so we mentioned him earlier, my God of the Week. I think, I gave it to the wholesale pack last week, so I'm being a bit wide with my gods, but I think we'll go specific, and I know it was more than just him, but Matteo Carreras, for everything we mentioned at the start of the podcast, with his stats, and Newcastle's win generally... Good to see the Falcons flying high. So I think Carreras, he can take it for the group. On behalf of all Argentinian Premiership players and Newcastle Falcons, good result up there and good to see them winning.
See.
So, right, that has been another ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times. As we mentioned, next week is going to be... It comes around so fast, doesn't it? England's squad announcement for the Six Nations. I think Wales are announcing their squad that week. Lots of the others will as well. I'll try and give you some sort of dispatch from my possible trip to France's European Cup action, or Champions Cup action, we should call it. But for now, thanks so much to Mark.
Pleasure.
Mark, when's your flight?
Saturday.
Right, and you get there on the week after
that? I get there Monday morning.
Yeah, okay. Because it's the Kiwi side of the line, isn't it? So you don't...
Which way do you go?
You go via LA.
It's the quickest way to get there.
Hope you enjoyed that all, lads and ladies. Thanks so much for downloading. Please subscribe, follow, tell all your friends about it, and join us again next week for another ruck. But for now, thank you very much and goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.